You're listening to The Point. We turn our attention now to a Revolutionary War era action drama set in the early upstart Republic of Vermont. It's filmmaker Jay Craven's latest film that will be shown at the Martha's Vineyard Film Center on August 6th and the Cape Cinema in Dennis on August 7th. Hi, Jay.
Hello.
So
good to talk to you.
You too. The film is Lost Nation, and it includes the story of Lucy Terry Prince, who was enslaved at the age of three in Western Massachusetts. And she has a fascinating story that I think a lot of people have probably never heard of. So tell us a little bit about Lucy.
Yeah, well, she spent 30 years in the service of a family in Deerfield, Massachusetts, the Wells family, and was sort of an instinctive storyteller and also a sort of wrangler of other storytellers. She reputedly would convene poetry slams and story slams, essentially, on the porch of the family home on Saturday nights, and just all comers would share their, you know, latest, and Lucy would as well. And her life was investigated by an English professor at Dartmouth College, Gretchen Grazina, who spent really 10 years digging into Lucy's story and finding just things like receipts for having purchased paper at a store in Northampton that would give her indication of, you know, what her writing output was, because only one of Lucy's poems actually survived, which is Barr's Fight, about the 1746 Deerfield raid. And the, you know, the poem became sort of known by heart by people as sort of the news account of that event throughout New England, and wasn't published for 100 years, but was written in 1746. And it's actually the first known work of African-American literature.
Right. And I was saying, in the beginning of the movie, we see her gaining her freedom. Her husband is buying her freedom. And one of the things that just so speaks of the time is she wants to take her children with her, of course. And Mrs. Wells is like, no, you're going to leave the daughter behind. Right. And right. You just think as a parent, you just like, that's just heart wrenching. But that kind of stuff happened all the time.
Yeah, no, it's true. And Lucy took a big risk in taking her children with her when she moved to southeastern Vermont, because they didn't have their documentation. They didn't have their papers.
Right.
It was an ongoing tension. And you see it a couple times in the movie where it comes up is just, you know, we're not documented. So
right. Yeah.
We need to.
Another interesting thing that I hadn't thought about, but at this time where the film is taking place, Vermont is not a state of its own, right? At this point, New York and New Hampshire both are claiming it.
That's right. So it was contested territory, and fiercely contested territory. And the governor of New Hampshire, I mean, the law was essentially on the side of New York, but the governor of New Hampshire, Benning Wentworth, established 131 towns with a piece of land, the best piece of land in each town for himself. And so this became, you know, New York suddenly said, wait a minute, and started moving on those land claims. And there was some fierce contention over that. And there were parts of the state that were primarily loyal to New York, like southeastern Vermont. So it was a land struggle taking place at the same time as the American Revolution.
So the film is based, obviously, on true events. How much did you have to fill in?
Well, there's a lot of information, certainly on the story of Ethan Allen and this particular land struggle. And there is also a clear path that Lucy followed, because when they faced pressure and some harassment, she used the court system to respond. And so there are some court records, although not court transcripts. Anyway, what happens is, I mean, I developed a script during a four-month writing class with 17 students from Sarah Lawrence College. And we consulted 162 sources. And so we're putting these sort of nuggets on the table of historical research and then shaping them into a narrative that will be coherent in terms of time flow and rhythm and character, because we're also switching between the Ethan Allen story and the Lucy Terry Prince story with some thematic crossover and a little bit of physical crossover. So it becomes a kind of assembling of a jigsaw puzzle to a certain extent. But every beat in the film really is motivated by research, and we can talk about that, you know, which we do in our Q&As. It's fascinating the way that sort of takes shape. And there's some speculative history also. There's some recent scholarship on Ethan Allen that really challenges a few of the myths And there were also some myths out there about Lucy that needed to be, brought into reality. So that part of it's also interesting.
Yeah. Tell us about the role of the students who worked on the film. This is something you've been doing in some of your films, right?
That's right. We since 2000, well, we first experimented with in 2005 with a picture called Disappearances, a whiskey smuggling adventure with Kris Kristofferson. And since then, we've been working with a crew that at this point is 30 professionals and 45 students from a dozen colleges. We come together for a whole semester. We start with a week at the Sundance Film Festival, then 7 weeks of classes, workshops, deep script immersion, some student short filmmaking, and preparation for the shoot in departments where students elect to participate. So some go to camera, lights, and sound, some production management, some costumes, some production design, building sets and wrangling props. And so students are playing substantial roles under the guidance of experienced professionals. And so it's a collaborative project and, a great sort of bonding experience and a team that comes together to get things done. I say to students, the only thing I can promise you is that on day one, we'll have nothing. And that within 15 weeks, we will discover this film.
Yeah. And you shot this at 52 Vermont and Massachusetts locations, including some in Nantucket. Some people might be familiar. That sounds like a lot of, I don't know, wrangles. It seems like a challenge to keep track of all of that.
This was a big project. It was very ambitious, went a little bit over budget, in fact. We filmed a little more than half of it on Nantucket, where we have been based for five films, in whole or in part. But the Nantucket Historical Association has always been a fabulous help. Parts of Nantucket pass very easily for Revolutionary War era Philadelphia. We used the Nantucket American Legion Hall to build our sets. But we also went to Western Massachusetts, to the Berkshires, and also went to Vermont. Massachusetts Film Incentive was supportive of the project, very important to us. And there's some Massachusetts history here because Northampton, Deerfield figure into the story. Also, Sam Adams was a supporter of Ethan Allen in his capture of Fort Ticonderoga. We have him appear during the Continental Congress, played by Sam Adams, his direct
I
descendant.
was going to mention that, which is funny. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, it actually, Matt Salinger, who has been involved with a couple of our films, who was the son of J.D. Salinger, was supposed to play that part. His schedule changed, and he said, "But I got a substitute for you." And I said, "Who's that?" He said, "Sam Adams." I said, "Well, what? Can he act?" He said, "We were in a production together in third grade, and I thought he was pretty good."
So far. And another name that Cape audiences will recognize is Jeff Zinn.
That's right, Jeff Zinn, who has been in several of our movies, and Jeff's dad was a very important mentor to me and my history professor in college. And Jeff's great. He's plays Jacob Bailey, who was a sort of obstinate member of the early Vermont government who did not like Ethan Allen, but was from the northeastern part of Vermont.
Right. Talk a little bit about Lucy's husband, who has a story also of becoming this entrepreneur, which was very difficult in
Yes,
those times.
that's right. Abijah, who had also been enslaved, was freed on the death of his whatever owner. And had a lot of friends and supporters in and around Northampton, one of whom gifted him this land in Guilford, Vermont, that they moved to. But Abijah was entrepreneurial by instinct, and he sets up, as soon as he gets to Vermont, he starts a transporting business, carrying goods and back and forth between eastern Vermont and Northampton, Deerfield area. He confronts a robbery on one occasion. Abijah was also known to have created a ferry service across the Connecticut River when he was in Massachusetts and when he was during the time that he was just after he was enslaved. So transportation was his thing, and he built it into a business and was very enterprising, worked hard, and also spent 5 years developing this homestead for the family in southeastern Vermont. Quite an interesting character, and smart, and clearly entrepreneurial, and wanting to make connections in the community. So he was transporting goods for certainly white settlers. Also, we see him in a relationship with a Mohican shopkeeper, which was based on some research that we'd done about the Stockbridge Mohicans, who were essentially driven to Wisconsin, but some actually filtered into the rest of the region. And they also were entrepreneurial, many of them wanting to start shops, wanting to sort of adapt European ways. And we found that to be an interesting character possibility.
Yeah. You mentioned, you sort of touched on this. Lucy kind of upsets the status quo with taking advantage of the early legal and political systems. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, interestingly, both as a woman and as a black woman, Lucy would have been prevented in most parts of the country at that point from participating in the legal system, but she was not prevented in Vermont. She did sort of intervene in one case where Abijah was taking a local blacksmith to court for not paying him for his goods, and Lucy takes a stand during that court session. But she came to see the court as a potential friend of the family, who, when things got too intense, she could turn to the court to get some relief, and did, all the way to the governor's Supreme Council, where Governor Chittenden and Ira Allen and Jacob Bailey and other sort of senior leaders of the state heard her plea for relief because of harassment that she was experiencing from her most direct neighbor, John Noyes, who is also a character in the story. So she was sort of fearless. There, in fact, is a what may be a myth that when Williams College had its first trustees meeting, Lucy showed up and held forth for 2 or 3 hours advocating for her son Festus to be admitted to Williams College. That can't be proven. It was sort of out there in the ether as one of the myths of Lucy Terry Prince. It wouldn't be contrary to her character, however.
Yeah. Is it coincidental that this film is coming out about the time of the celebration of the 250th anniversary of the revolution? Is this intentional?
It's a little bit coincidental. I hadn't really thought about it. The idea for this film occurred to me on the second day that I lived in Vermont, which was May 2nd, 1974. I thought I broke my arm in a woods incident and basically spent 3 months doing research at the research room of the Vermont Historical Society and said, wow, this is a dramatic story. But then I put it aside, and 50 years have passed, and I've made 10 other movies. And just fun. I thought this was going to be my last movie, but it actually turned out not to be. But anyway, that's another story. But I said, I think it's time. If I'm going to do a last movie, this is the one that I sort of thought of first. Let's do it. And so, yes, it was time that things were being celebrated, but it actually didn't occur to me for a while. But it turns out to be quite convenient because the film is traveling to many small towns throughout the region, not only in Vermont, but Massachusetts, New York, and New Hampshire. And the audiences have been great. And I think people appreciate the opportunity to reflect, have some conversation about this time in history because there are parallels to now. We open the film with a quote from Alice Walker saying, all history is current. And of course, Howard Zinn was Alice's major mentor in her life, and so she really took to understanding history and thinking about it and writing about it. So, it is the time, and I think it's also given just how everybody's suddenly talking about the Constitution and democracy and civil rights and what's what and what's representation and all the rest. So this conversation comes into play. Also, Ethan's particular leadership strategy was frankly a bit autocratic. And I think how he and his brother and all the rest functioned both in the political world, the legal world, and also the private enterprise world, they were big land speculators and amassed 200,000 acres of territory in this contested area, which was at risk in terms of how the politics were going to finally end up.
Yeah, I imagine you have some lively conversations following this film.
Absolutely.
The film is Lost Nation. It'll screen at 7:30 Wednesday, August 6th at the Martha's Vineyard Film Center in Vineyard Haven, and at 7 p.m. Thursday, August 7th at the Cape Cinema in Dennis. And you're going to be at both screenings to introduce the film and for that post-screening Q&A. And we'll have a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Jay Craven, thanks so much for joining us and for doing the film.
Thank you, Mindy. Really appreciate it.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.